finish yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Okay, lads, so the league continues to deliver. So there was a stat on the RTE website. 56% of the games so far have been won by a single score or less, or by three or less. Isn't that great stuff? We're talking on Monday about the different comebacks. Fermanagh with a great comeback against Roscommon. Laois coming back against Roscommon. Kerry against Galway. Cavan against Westmeath twice. You just don't get that in the Championship, don't you not? You don't get those to and fro and that one team winning, the other team coming back. You don't get really comebacks because so much of the Championship is predictable. And hopefully when the new Championship structure is voted on, we could have all this excitement in the summer when the fields are hard, when every team is at Championship pitch, and we can have comebacks, we can have excitement. The numbers for the podcast here will go through the roof.
most importantly.
Most importantly. But isn't it great?
It is great, and that's probably the last couple of National League campaigns has probably fed into that dialogue to create a two-tiered or a divisional kind of championship, bit like the Champions League in the soccer, which will give us higher quality games. But the National League is probably our best competition outside of maybe the semi-finals of the All-Ireland in the football, because everything else is... Even the Super 8s have been somewhat lacklustre. I know they restructured this year so that there wasn't any kind of dead duck games for the third game. It's been hugely exciting, in fairness.
It definitely
has.
Yeah,
but the evidence has been there for years as well. And it's not just the National League as well. You mentioned others, Jerry mentioned Champions League. It's in other sports as well that, like, you'd swear that when you get evenly matched teams together, do you know why have we been blind to it for so long that, like, when you get the evenly matched teams, you're going to have more competitive games?
Yeah, it works in the hurling.
That's it. And, like, the thing that annoys me kind of most about the tier two kind of debate when it comes to championship as well is that, like, that the counties that are in Division 3 or Division 4, that they won't get the same chance at the All-Ireland as, you know, counties that are in Division 1 and Division 2. But, like, we've seen the reason why is because that when they do, they just get subject to these one-sided games that, like, in the middle of the summer, as you said, when we should be, that should be the time for, you know, the best games to happen. So I don't know, like, with this mounting evidence and the tier two about to come in this summer, you'd like to think that somebody will see sense and make this the kind of main competition.
I think it should. I think that's obviously one of the proposals, and we hope that that goes through, because it always annoys me when you've the people, the hurling people saying, oh, the hurling championship is much better. And you're like, yeah, because Limerick play Tipperary in the first round.
Yeah.
And they're all Ireland contenders.
Yeah.
We get hammerings for the first until we get into August. Sure, you're not comparing like with like. We need Division 1 teams playing each other. And then we have a comparison. Great news for Tyrone. So the news broke last night that Cathal McShane, we called it here on the show. We said, don't panic about this. He's too old. This is too much of a risk. He's not really... By the time he makes it and starts earning any decent money, and that's already a big risk, he won't get that many years earning decent money. Do you know, I'd say Cathal weighed all that up. I'd say somebody potentially from Tyrone might have come in and says, here, we'll give you a really good job. I hope that would have happened. And maybe Cathal used this potential thing, nice little holiday for a trial and a potential leverage to get looked after in Tyrone, and if he did, more power to him.
Was he 10 days over there?
I'm not sure how long he was meant to go over for anyway, yeah, which doesn't seem like a particularly long period of time, but it seemed up in the air until last night that whether he was going to stay around or not. But
yeah,
as I said to Conan this morning, actually, he goes, he must have been listening to the show, because we know Tiernan McCandles, because we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. And just as you said, how long
but
it was going
to
take.
Maybe Tiernan McCann said to him, Tiernan listens, that he does a lot of commuting with his job, he's on the road, and maybe Tiernan rang Cathal and went, mate, you're too old.
Well, he said this,
by the time you start earning decent money, you'll have to retire, injuries could play a part, stay with us.
Didn't Ron O'Gara do that? He was coming up to contract renewal with the RFU, and he was on holidays. He went to American football game, the Patriots, and through, I think, maybe...
No, he never went.
No. He ever... Did he go to a game?
Kicker.
Or, yeah, no, but he met the owner, no, I think, through Frankie Sheen, or he met somebody just going to a game,
yeah,
and people saw them together and said that, God, he must be in talks to be a kicker. So Gara said, sure, I'll let this kind of unfold, I'll say nothing. and it might help me my contract.
He did because it was not long after Brian O'Driscoll did the same thing with the owner of, I think it was Bordeaux or Biarritz at the time. Made a big show of going to a Heineken Cup game, met the owner, made sure he was photographed, and then bam, 2 weeks later he gets this bumper eye or a few contracts.
I think somebody from that American,
me and Connor run a podcast the other day.
Ronan O'Gara told me the story about this on Sports July, but I can't remember. I think the fella just visited Ireland or so. I think there was something completely innocuous about this, the way, but he did, he probably used it to his advantage. Aidan O'Rourke's talking on, he does a piece on RTE which I read every week, and it, well, this is a bit out there, I don't think any of us are going to agree with this, but listen, I can see where he's coming from. He's talking about Sean O'Shea playing at centre half back for Kerry. Now, anyone watch Sean O'Shea marking Brian Fenton will go, marking someone is probably not high up on Sean O'Shea's list of priorities. I think if Sean O'Shea is centre half back for Kerry playing against Dublin, who's he going to be marking? Kieran Kilkenny? That's a bloodbath. Mm. So I can see where Aidan O'Shea, obviously thinking about his great football brain, his distribution, you know, his class on the ball, and the potential for him to give good ball into the forwards, but that would be negated surely playing against the good teams where there's no hiding place for, you know, for someone who's not prepared to mark his man.
We, in 2011, the All-Ireland semi-final against Donegal, where they obviously went ultra defensive, except for Colin McFadden was outrageous that day. I think we might have won 8-6.
Yeah.
Michael Murphy was in his half-back line the whole time, and if they had been more adventurous, they could have possibly taken us that particular day. But as a former centre-back, you're looking at the likes of Sean O'Shea, the talent he has. If he's in the half-back line, I'm absolutely thrilled. In his own half-back line, rather, you're absolutely thrilled. I think that would be a waste. I know Seamus Boyne, and listen, he had a piece with...
He disagreed, yeah.
What's the lady's name? Marie Crowe, with Doherty, too, yesterday. Talked with the Sigurdsson as well, but he certainly disagreed. You want to have your better forwards up front. I know defensively Kerry have been a bit open the last couple of games and even during last year's championship, but that's probably the style of football Kerry play as well.
Could there be potential for him to play centre half back potentially against Donegal, but not against Dublin? Do you get me? You know, because against Donegal he'll have a free role, and it's nice, it's good. Kieran Kilkenny used to play wing back, for example, with Dublin, you know, against very defensive teams. I know the game is moving against that, away from that.
He's such a good player, he could play anywhere, but he's not an out-and-out defender.
No.
You want your more prolific forwards further up the field, and you want the dogs closer to your own goal, and that's just the way you got to set up your team. But would he do a good job back there? He would. Last year in the Dublin Championship, the manager of St Vincent's trialled Darren McConnelly centre back.
How did that go?
Not very well at all.
We didn't succeed you, that was the problem.
But
so what was Dermot doing wrong? Was he just holding the middle and spraying balls? Obviously that's what he wanted him there for. In theory you can see where that's coming from too, but
teams were dropping off against him, so against us a lot of the time, playing the Donegal style defence. And sure, Dermot had 20, 30 yards of space, but sure, any relatively decent Division 1 footballer would be able to spray balls around to the pockets in front of that mass defence. But you wanted Dermot or Sean O'Shea getting the ball on the opposition's 50, who was able to spray the ball through the eye of a needle
20, closer.
30 yards closer.
Yeah.
Whereas the most centre backs or backs wouldn't have that precision that like Sean O'Shea or Dermot would have had.
No, I completely agree.
And even if they were to do it against Donegal, like Donegal maybe, you know, in the McGuinness era pre-2014, let's say, if they were to do it against Donegal this year, Stephen Rochford and Declan Bonner would, you know, come up with a system to not allow Sean O'Shea to dictate it from there. I'd say Donegal would become that adaptable that they'd probably change their tactics, say, well, if they're putting them back there, we have to have a centre forward who will run him ragged and make sure that he doesn't have the time to, you know, to be picking pockets left, right and centre.
Yeah.
But I think what Aidan O'Rourke is probably talking about is going back to a bygone is a bit much, but like an era I remember, maybe mid-90s to mid-2000s, where Kieran McGeaney, this man beside me, you know, the real kind of a stopper centre-back that could also play ball, that nearly the best of them, the game revolved around Kieran McGeaney when he was at his best, I thought. But I think that the game has moved on to a certain degree, that doesn't really happen anymore, like teams defend and attack as units, and you're not as reliant on that pivot at six to be kind of dictating everything, both from a defensive and an attacking point.
Well, that's the point, and he named them out. So he named Henry Downey, he named Seamus Moynihan, he named Kieran McGeaney, he named Graham Canty, he named Carol Lacey, all dominating centre backs who
consistently
But then I was thinking, like, who are the regular centre backs on any any team now. Kerry don't have one. They swap it around. Dublin don't have one. You could have Johnny Cooper one day. You could have James McCarthy another day. You could even have, like, Davy Byrne, yeah, centre back. Like, they just don't mind who plays centre back. Tyrone don't have one. They're constantly chopping and changing. Donegal don't have one. They have a young Conor O'Donnell playing there the last two games this year in the league. Monaghan don't have one. Haven't had one. Galway have been playing John Daly this year, but under Bradshaw maybe was their centre back. Yeah. But they had no problem changing around. Mayo have Colin Boyle, but again, no Lee Keegan could in. There's no dominating centre back anymore in the game, and I think maybe you're right. I was trying to think of why that is, and I used to love a good centre back, and I think years ago it was because only the centre forward used to forage deep and go in and try and get breaks, so the centre back kind of would hold back, whereas the two wing backs would kind of be watching somebody, so the centre back got on loads of loose ball and, you know what I mean, was on it a bit more. And maybe that's the now all three half forwards drop back. So the half back line now decides which of us will hold back, Jerry. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or which of it? There's no kind of person that does it, you know, on their own.
I suppose Conor's right. The game kind of ebbs and flows far more like nearly basketball, the way it can be played on occasion. But depending on the team that you're playing and the way Paul Joyce is trying to get Galway to play, he's trying to keep four or five forwards up there the whole time. Well, then I think you do need a pivot there. You do need a six there, a strong character who's able to organise the guys around them, particularly when the Galway forwards have the ball in the opposition's full back line, that if they are turned over, that you're set up and you're ready to take what's coming towards you. Where teams are just pushing up and defending together, or you're playing against a mass offence, you probably just need a plus one standing on your own 45-yard
right.
line.
And that doesn't have to be the centre-back.
It doesn't have to be the centre-back. And I know you've talked about this a couple of times where most teams bring out a corner forward. So maybe the corner-back who's marking a corner forward is a ball player, is a wing forward or whatever, and he's picking a ball in the middle of the field. So sometimes it could be that particular player is holding the fourth and the 45-yard line and the half-back line are pushed down a bit. But it depends who you're playing. The example of Dublin, getting the matchups right is kind of key, and depending who would have played over the years, the different style of defenders that we had, Jim would have tried to match like with like, and depending on who we were playing, it might have resulted in, if Keane O'Sullivan was injured, it might have resulted in a Johnny being centre back, or if you want the Johnny to do a man marking job, it might result in a Davy Byrne kind of holding the fort or a John Small. But we saw in the All-Ireland final replay this year where Jim, in fairness, changed around and Johnny wasn't doing a man marking job.
He played centre back, yeah.
He was the back, you know, sweeping.
So. But that's the thing. So in Dublin's back line now, you just have to be a good footballer. Yeah. And marking has to be part of it. It nearly have to be an all rounder, yeah, right? There's no such thing as the traditional full back line and half back line, is there?
It's, well, for me, I think you need a strong character at three and a fairly strong footballer at six who's an extremely good communicator and who reads the game well,
yeah,
particularly in the centre back role. Having played a couple of games full back with Dublin, remember marking Stephen O'Neill in National League in Croke Park, like I was right up his arse and he scored 4 points off me, like, you know. I said, this is a rotten position. It's like playing a different sport. So
yeah,
I said, can I please go back out?
Oh, listen, I play cornerback a few times myself.
It's a different game.
How can anyone enjoy Gaelic football playing back then?
But that's, say, the Rory O'Carrolls of this world. Even
they pride themselves on that.
Neil
yeah?
McGee as yeah. well. I know Neil's pushed on a bit, still an excellent defender. But those lads were delighted just getting a hand in. And if they didn't sell the ball all game, I'm sure they were happy enough once the opposition man didn't get it. But no, I think it depends who you're playing. It's more, what would you call it, unstructured in terms of the ebb and flow of Gaelic football. But you do need a good central spine, whether it's a strong six with a strong kind of holding kind of midfielder.
Yeah, but that's the thing, but they keep swapping it around. I understand your point. And maybe you can even give us the kind of, like, an idea of what the centre-back needs to do for organising. Because it's the centre-back pretty much traditionally that organises the defence.
Yeah.
But if you keep changing that man around, how can he do that job, you know, convincingly?
Look, Dublin have an abundance of riches there, certainly at the moment, where you have intelligent guys, well-educated, not saying actually well-educated, but the lads are. Most senior county footballers now from the top teams are all going to third level institutions, so they're intelligent guys, and So to have an understanding of the role as a wing back, the role as a centre back, if you end up pushing up the field, taking a shot, and you find yourself playing corner forward for the opposition kick out, you know what you're doing on the opposition press. So you're not sprinting all the way back, getting your breath and your wrecked, and the lads get a quick kick out and the ball's kicked over your head. So having an understanding of everyone's role in the field.
Say if you're centre back and you see Jack gone.
Yeah.
He's put the burners on, and now James decides to go on. Will you shout at McCarthy? Say, "Here, James! Whoa, 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 whoa! Would that be part of your job?"
Well, did we talk about it, or was it in the show notes we didn't get into? But did the Super Game 2013 All Ireland semi final against Kerry, Jack and James were sounds like Jack and Jill going up the field. Jack and James going up the field, and Gerard left in his own mark in the gooch for trying to. But so that was actually a case where it was a big game, and there's probably nerves and there's a lack of communication. But it's quite difficult to actually hear anyone in Croke Park when it's packed. So I actually remember with Pat Gilroy, a lot of the training games, in-house games, we used to play 40 minutes of football, like high intensity championship pace football, or as close to it, AB games, and you weren't allowed to talk to anyone on the pitch, and it was just pure silence because he was trying to imitate what you experienced.
Ah, very good, right.
But a bit like Shane O'Neill, what's his name? O'Neill, Keane O'Neill.
Keane O'Neill.
I love that story. It's a great story.
I attacked that on this show, if you ever heard it. Oh, I did, yeah. I had no time for that nonsense.
Some nonsense.
That was just silly stuff. But that's interesting. So you just played a game in silence to replicate it.
Yeah.
I remember Muggsy talking before one of the All-Irelands that he used to get a headphone and put in crowd noises to replicate the crowd.
Yeah,
you know, when he's taking a free or the jeering noises or whatever. So that's it. So say 2013, you got kind of scapegoated that year. Was it halftime you were taking
half-time,
off?
Halftime, yeah.
And were you dropping off Gooch too much, or were you told to push up on him, or were you following your orders? Because I'd imagine dropping off Gooch, because he's such a good passer, your covering job is made a lot more difficult anyway. So
what they did really well, I think Dunica Walsh was giving Jack a bit of a run around, and Jack was kind of following him. I can't remember who was on James' wing at the time.
It wasn't Darren Sullivan around that time, no.
Could have been. Could have been, yeah.
But the lads were clever. Say, we'll isolate Jer. Doesn't have light and pace, so we'll just isolate him with one of the best footballers ever. And so Walsh and if it was Darren O'Sullivan, just vacated. They nearly dropped to their own midfield half back line.
And the two boys followed them.
And we actually weren't supposed to be doing that. And you're trying to say, lads, wouldn't he be tuck in, like, you know? But that didn't happen. But look, we won. The lads made a call at half time. Management, Keane dropped back. I think Dennis Bassett came in midfield. We tightened things up. You'll probably notice the contrast in how we were structured defensively. It was much more zonal for the large part. But,
right. And then to stop Gooch being able to run into those two spaces either side of him.
Well, I don't care if you're any of those guys, Aidan O'Rourke mentioned, or even Carl Lacey, another super footballer. If you're marking the Division 1 senior county footballer, and he has, like, Croke Park is 90 metres wide, and you're standing in the middle with 4 metres either side to run into, like, with kick passes like Kerry have, that's a pretty challenging task. But it was a good experience, but we got things right for the final, and we got through it. But they're all learnings. But most teams defensively try to keep, say, +1 at the back, and how that looks for different teams depends on how they want to set up.
I think Dublin learned that lesson, obviously, the following year against Donegal. That was 2013, when the philosophy was, let's just go out and, you know, win in a shootout.
Well, there's one, I know I'm not doing a lot of waffling here. There was that semi-final against Donegal. I was injured. It was the best game I never played. I think I got more positive comments about not playing that game. But again, I think there was a clip where Rory O'Carroll was marking Michael Murphy, obviously not the game, on R45 on the Cusack stand sideline. And Durkin had his long kick out flipped over the top, one that McHughes came through.
Yeah.
And
for the third goal, if not two goals in number that game. Just literally a fist over the midfield, and the space was there.
Yeah, and at the same time, right,
Jesus, someone get Brennan onto the field.
I was eating a cornetto or a hot dog. But Dermot Connolly and Paul Flynn had hit a few whopper points from outside the 45. And Dermot actually forced Durkin to a great save for such a big man. I think it was on his left hand, and if that ball had gone in, I think we would have gone maybe 5 6 points.
They got around the ropes,
and all of a sudden, from the next kick out or two, we were on the ropes. So there's such fine margins, yeah. And what we learned from that game was that there are such fine margins in attack, but you have to be set up defensively for a feck up the other end of the field, which we weren't in that particular game or the first half against Kerry in 2013. But that's where a good centre back or a good communicator comes into it, you know.
Comes into it. Connor, do you have anything that you wanted to say there before I put it in?
No, not particularly when you've somebody as experienced as Jared that is so used to that sixth position. All I was going to say was that you mentioned Cullen Boyle. Like, I would say that, like, and just to get my Mayo speak in here, but like the since the Horan era, say since 2011. Mayo's half back line has been the strongest line, and we all during that period, you mentioned Cullen Boyle, but I wouldn't even have Cullen Boyle as a traditional six. He's kind of all action. Lee Keegan's not a traditional six. No. Lee Keegan prefers when he's actually marking somebody, I find, and Donald Vaughan played there in the first few years and he was just a line breaker. So like, I think it's kind of nearly a sign of how the game has evolved. Like we mentioned there that like Dublin
was
and Mayo
was more than a half back, I remember.
Way back in 2000
when the Beachy in 06
he came on as a wing, he was just told to score a goal, but he came on wing back that day. I think he could have been marking Shane Ryan or something.
In around
like that
time, he was a wing back. Yeah,
but just a sign of like that considering that Mayo's half back line has been its best line for that long, and we still really haven't had a recognised centre back, I think is a sign of how
in the traditional sense. Well. Yeah, well, maybe we need to stop talking about centre backs. How I kind of remember them, because look, when you're my age and you grew up through the 90s, you have an idea of what a centre back does, and you need to just scramble that from your brain now. And maybe that's the way.
And the 2000s for Gerard as well, remember?
And it continued on into the 2000s.
Well, Keane O'Sullivan kept it going, and John Small then had a few games there, a few All Irelands there as well. But what Keane did really well again was
Keane kind of was nearly a full time sweeper rather than a centre back.
He was, and again, depending on how far, for example, if the opposition had possession on their 45-yard line, Keane might play a plus one on our 45-yard line to stop a forward from into the pockets. And if the opposition moved the ball through the hands and they were getting closer to our midfield or 65-yard line, well, that's where you see her. Keane was dropping off quite a bit then, you know.
Yeah,
that's the way it were. And John Small did it quite well too.
Yeah. I think Keane played centre half back for the 5 6 years when centre back was the easiest position ever. You literally had no one to worry. You had nobody to worry about.
Outside of Mayo's blueprint, which was effective, but you just used to shoot yourselves in the foot. In the few drawn games, what have you? But that was the only time where Keane was nearly engaged, because Mayo did try to play six up front.
Everybody else dropped somebody back.
Yeah, but he had to engage the centre back as well. Don't let him have it handy.
Yeah, no, exactly. A bit of news from Kerry, lads, is that they went to a county board meeting. We talked about, we're not going to talk about this again. We all agree the manager should pick the captain. It went to a county board meeting of club delegates and it got defeated. Well, it won 50-48, but it needed a 2/3 majority. So they're going to continue. I find this incredible. So Peter Keane wants to be able to pick his own captain. Now, this is no slight on David Clifford, who will probably be a brilliant captain. It's just, we would have said it before he picked David Clifford. He wants to pick his own captain. Eamon Fitzmaurice before him wants to pick his own captain. Seamus Moynihan, a player, and the Kerry players think it's better if they pick their own captain. And what club delegates vote? Nah, we know better than you. What would you guys know? Sure, we're in control here. It just pisses me off about GA politics, that player and management's wishes can be overruled by bloody county board delegates at a county board meeting. It pisses me right off. So they're continuing now that the tail is wagging the dog. And if I was the Kerry manager, I would just pick my own captain. I said, do what you want. If you want that, just get rid of me then. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because Liam Kearns came into Laois and we had that tradition. And Liam Kearns just said, no, absolutely not. I don't remember it going to a county board meeting. He just said, no, I'm picking my own. That's not. And he's from Kerry, which was a weird one. Anyways, we don't have time to spend too long on it. It's just the politics.
Of Kerry football make you sick to your teeth.
That's it. The politics of Mayo football make me sick to my teeth. Okay, last but by no means least, we have Keith Ricken, who's the Cork under 20 manager, and he's also GA development officer in Cork IT. So you've probably come across him, Gerard, plenty of time.
Well,
sounds like a great character altogether.
Superman.
Is he? Yeah. So I'd never heard of him, to be honest with you. So he was the Cork under 20 manager last year when they won the All Ireland. They came back from a disastrous start against Dublin to beat them. They had great team spirit. You don't come back like that without a great team spirit. And they won an All-Ireland that they were not expected to win at the start of the year. Obviously, David Clifford and Sean O'Shea and Foley and these lads playing with the Kerry seniors helped out a lot that way as well. You'd imagine Kerry would have walked that if they had their full team. But anyway, so he had some great quotes. He was across the media. What was the launch he was at? He was at this
Sigerson, it was the Electric Ireland Sigerson thing, I think.
Something like that. Anyway, so here he is on releasing players. This fella's a breath of fresh air now. He's a relaxed, easygoing sort of fella. And this is what he says on releasing players. You know, I get requested every week to release players, but I laugh at that. It's like I'm a prison warden. I never will and never will stop a lad playing with his club. So fantastic stuff. Release them to your club. It just sounds like, it does, it sounds like prison warden language, really, that we're just so used to that that's it. Then he talked about underage coaches. I thought this was a great one. He said, he's talking about the underage coaches. It was a mentor from the other team shouting, break the tackle, burst out, find a man. He said, and I was saying to myself, I might say that to my 20-year-olds, but these are fellas who believe in fairies, who wet the bed, who do all these things, leave the landing light on until they're 12 or 13. Like, isn't that brilliant? Like, we know at underage games, you have parents or mentors who think they're Jim Gavin and think that they're trying to live out these fantasies, you know, through children, and they'd never get a job that are like under 17, minor under 20, because they might not have a clue. But with the under sevens, they're doing a job and they think that they're really important. And I think it's the gas one shouting instructions at young lads who wet the bed and believe in fair believe in fairies. So here, this is my favourite one. This is what he says and what young players want, or maybe players in general, the three G's. And I'd never heard this before. He says gear, grub and games. He says they're the three G's and they're what every young fellow wants. In my day, it was a G for girls as well. But now they're so focused on football, so we leave the girls away for a sec. But if you have the gear, grub and games, once you deliver those three things, lads are happy. I laughed when I read it. Like, I mean, how many times, Ger or Connor, growing up through teams, what do players give out about? Gear. We've no gear. We never get gear. And if gear lands in, the excitement of it, like, and we've no grub. So if you start getting grub after training, it's a huge thing as well. And then games, we're training, we've no matches, and they're giving out. I don't know if you've heard the three G's before, but it's a good one.
The problem is when it's in that order, when your priorities are gear, grub, and games.
I don't think it's necessarily in that order. But if you get the gear, you get the grub, you play well in games, you might get the girls.
There you go.
So there you go. So it might be the fourth
the
one.
The Keith Ricken philosophy.
Keith, a great guy. Obviously, know him well, and I referenced the lads in DCU last week, Willie, where we're kind of competing colleges. We're actually quite close, all the GA officers, in terms of developing games and organising competitions, what have you.
Yeah.
So, a lot of time for Keith, and he is a breath of fresh air. He'd be a great fella on the show. You just want to have a good 2-hour slot available. And only slagging Keith if he's listening, but he is a breath of fresh air. And you could actually, I watched the Munster final, the All-Ireland semi-final and the All-Ireland final at the under-20s last year. And even the way the Cork players played, they just played like the shackles were off. It was a bit of fresh air, just go out and play football, play for one another. You get away with it at certainly 20s senior. There's a bit more negativity and tactical awareness and dark arts.
And a bit more science involved as well, because you're kind of not too big on backroom teams and, you know, all the hangers-on with that kind of stuff as well. But you have to be at senior level. But I do think that a fella like him with younger fellas, because I always found with my underage coaches, we responded well to really liking them. There wasn't really a tactical game back then, but I remember thinking with our minor manager especially, he didn't want to come back with us in 96. He was with us in 95, and we went, begged him to come back because we just loved him. He was really good to us. And I think young fellas, potentially you get a team spirit around just being really nice to these young lads. Yeah. You know what I mean? Being like a father figure to them and treating them well.
If you think back, who was your favourite teacher in school? So we all have our favourite
teachers.
You probably don't remember what they taught you. You know what subject it was, but you kind of remember how the major feel, in terms of being encouraging you, driving you on, being sympathetic, being compassionate, not being a dick, not letting you away with too much, but not being nasty to you. And it's the same thing, and particularly when you're working with college students like Keith is as well. It's about focusing on the positives within the individual, and then when someone feels loved, they feel happy, they feel like they belong. And I know we're getting airy fairy.
No, it's true.
spiritual podcast.
But they want, you want to win for someone that you really like.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, and it's not rocket science. Yeah.
And you can see that with the way the Cork players played. I see that in the way Cork IT players play when we play against them. Unfortunately, UCC get a lot of the better players, just the way of the world. But they give it everything for Keith. And when you have a manager like we've all experienced, Mickey Whelan was one great guy for me.
Like that.
Yeah. You'd do anything for him. You'd run through walls for him, like, you know.
Yeah.
And again, we can think of the great teachers and coaches we had growing up. And we can remember the idiots as well, like, you know.
But, yeah, yeah.
Even the interviews that the Cork players used to give after the games last year, remember, after the All-Ireland, like, you know, it wasn't this stick that we stuck to the process or anything like that. It was real kind of free flow and real. You could tell that they enjoyed playing for Keith Rickon. As you said, that's what they're going to remember years from now. Do you know what I mean?
Did you hear Jim Gavin giving Kieran Kilkenny's Man the Match award speech after the Kerry game?
No.
It was like listening to Jim talk.
But, straight out of the Gavin playbook. Oh, yeah.
Kieran Kilkenny's interview.
Yeah,
Kieran,
yeah, and then Desi Farrell happened to outdo Jim Gavin in the interview afterwards, which I didn't think possible.
I didn't hear the Desi part.
Desi's desperate. Yeah. I think Kieran Kilkenny got so boring, he said at the end of the Kerry match that he was looking forward to the winter. Yeah, did you hear about the end of that? I was like, what's he talking about? It doesn't make any sense. Right, listen, lads, we've gone way over time. We'll come back with Kieran Sheehan.
Happiness hit her like a train on a track.
I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus, and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know.
The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your love and your love behind. You can't carry
me. All right, so Kieran Sheehan is back from Oz. He's back on the Cork team and he joins us on the show now. Welcome home, Kieran.
Thanks very much, Cullen. Thanks for having me on.
No bother at all. Come here, how are you settling back in? You're back a while now.
Back a while now, yeah. We came back in the start of October last year, so settling in quite well now. I came back at a good time there, Aero, where my club were in the latter stages of the county, so got to join up with those lads and ended up getting the county medal, which was a great start to the move back home.
Not too bad.
Definitely settling well.
Very good. I'd say even coming on the first game back with the club, you were nervous.
Oh, absolutely. I was nervous before I even got home because I knew we'd be kind of still going at that stage. But look, I suppose it's kind of one of those fairy tale things because I suppose, like, even any of the lads that are out in Australia at the moment, they think about, you know, you'd be thinking about playing with their club all the time, and, you know, coming home and winning a county is kind of like what's going through your mind a lot of time out there, to be honest with you. And to experience that, look, I'm very fortunate, but it was a great experience knowing up there.
Right, and you thought about Gaelic football a lot while you were out there, because you were out there for a long time, and I was reading a quote that said, from the moment I flew out of Dublin Airport, that's out there, I thought about playing with Cork again, and you watched all of Cork's matches when you were out there. You didn't kind of disconnect at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, you know, like you grow up loving the game, and then all of a sudden you're stepping away from it, but it still consumes your mind an awful lot. As I said, look, the minute I left Dublin, you know, you're thinking about, you know, playing with Cork again. Will it happen? Won't it happen? But you know what, like as I said there, I kind of kept an eye on all the games from over in Australia. I was watching on GAA over there, and it's hard to tune yourself out from it after being so close with it for so long. But look, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't wishing that I'd get another crack at it, another chance of playing, wearing the right jersey. And look, I've been lucky enough that the body has got itself to a position now where I can compete to some level anyway, at intercounty level. So I've been lucky, very lucky, and absolutely, it's just great to be back playing.
Yeah, because so when you finished up with Carlton, you didn't actually come directly home. I'm just wondering why you didn't do that, you know, because you're 30 this year, you would have been 28 that year. What was the thinking behind not coming directly home?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big things, I suppose, was the lifestyle out in Australia. I said to my wife Amy there, we had experienced the kind of lifestyle from, I suppose, like, it's kind of, you know, when you're a professional athlete out there, a lot of your time is consumed by, you know, trying to achieve, you know, the ultimate and trying to you know, get a contract year in, year out, and it's all their focus is on the, you know, the sporting side of things. And look, to be fair, we got to experience some of the lifestyle, but then I suppose when the contract finished up there, we said this is a wonderful opportunity, you know, for us to really experience kind of Melbourne and Australia for what it is. And look, we had a couple of years there. I got a wonderful opportunity working with the AFL Players Association in the player development space, and that was something I'm really passionate about, and that experience was phenomenal. So look, we kind of, things kind of fell into place for us when the contract finished up, and look, we saw it as a kind of an opportunity for two of us to kind of, you know, experience Australia from a different point of view then.
Right, okay. And I suppose, was that a good way to transition back into working life, you know, because I'm sure coming from a professional a professional lifestyle back to GA and back to working, you kind of bridged that gap in a way, have you?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I went back, and as I said there, I worked at the AFL Players Association. I was alumni program manager there, and worked with a lot of the past players, and dealing a lot with the transition out of the game. With a lot of the players, you know, face a lot of issues when they're transitioning out of the game. And you know, I got kind of good exposure to that as well. Sat down with fellas and had good conversations around, you know, what their plan looked like after football. And you know, I was kind of, I really enjoyed that side of it. And as you said there, it's probably made the transition from my own kind of career out that bit easier as well. A bit of more understanding of how it all works, and to be able to have that connection to sport as well in my job straight out from, you know, playing football was important for me, to be able to, you know, adapt to that working life, because you still have some sort of a connection to the footballing world as well. So absolutely, look, it was a fabulous experience. Like 2 years of working with, you know, elite athletes there, from a personal well-being side of things and a personal development side of things. So it was it was a dream job for me at the time.
Yeah. So how does the conversation go when you're leaving beautiful Melbourne to come back to rainy Cork because you want to play football? What's your wife saying? Listen, you might want to play football, but I don't want to play football.
Yeah, look, it was that conversation actually went quite smoothly, surprisingly. My wife has been kind of with me all the way. She came out to Australia with me at the time, and she's kind of been through it all as well. So we had that 2 years there where we spent some great time there just exploring Australia, and I think we got to a point in our lives as well where we were saying, you know, we wanted to come back to Ireland at some stage, and the timing felt right. We got married the previous December, and we kind of said that, you know, let's go home now, let's try build a career for ourselves back home now while we can. I took that angle anyway. The footballing side came in later after that, but look, I suppose I had a couple of years left in the body, look, from my own perspective, and I feel like, you know, now is the time to come in and cash in that time that I have left. So look, it was a part of the decision making, certainly, but the stronger part of it was kind of coming home and building a career for ourselves, you know, professionally as well.
And moving back home. And come here, you're back on the team already. This is good going for a man who spent so long away.
It's been really okay for myself. I've been very lucky, as I said before there, like Air Oak, my club, you know, asked me to come on straight away, and I was delighted to just be a part of it and be able to have some sort of an impact. But then I suppose the conversation progressed after that with Ronan and his team there with Cork. And look, I was only delighted to be involved. As I said, I felt like I had something to give. But look, time will tell, I suppose, with it. It's still the early stages of the year. Hopefully I can add some sort of an impact anyway, be it on or off the field. But so far, so good. Look, we've had a couple of good wins, a good start to the league, and hopefully that continues.
Yeah, exactly. I think I was reading a quote where you're saying that Ronan was really good with you. He wasn't putting you under any pressure. And I think that's one thing I talk about on the show of players that come back from Australia. Everybody thinks these lads are going to be unbelievable and we're saved. You know, such and such is back. It puts a lot of pressure maybe on the player that's coming back.
Yeah, look. I think on this, I think it's a slow process. You kind of have to be patient with it, and I think that your attitude towards it is the biggest. If you can get the right mind frame going back, that, you know, look, this may take time. And Ronan definitely took that approach, and he said, look, patience is a massive thing. If it comes earlier than later, then great. If it doesn't, then we're willing to bide our time and wait for it to happen. And he's been outstanding with that side of things, and even the high-performance staff here in Cork, Kevin Smith and Keane O'Neill, and have been really understanding with like the load management and what I need to do to get back to, you know, that level. And that's had a massive impact on me and my approach to actually getting back in there. Because look, obviously enough, any guy that does come back and wants to play at that level, you know, you're very eager and you want to play straight away. So there is an element of holding back a little bit and being patient and hopefully that it does come then. Yeah. After that, you know.
You definitely picked a very good time to leave Gaelic football, because we went through 5 or 6 years of very, very defensive football, and it's starting to turn back around now where, you know, the teams are, you know, being a little bit more offensive and kicking the ball a little bit more. So I'm sure you're out there in Australia saying, I'd love to be back playing, but I'm not sure if I'd like to be on a full forward line with two sweepers covering me.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm still finding it, you know, a bit of a challenge. It's still a lot different to when I left, I think, you know, in terms of the way the ball moved, the kind of fluency of it. But I think, you know what, people are having a crack now. It's certainly different. Like, we played Donegal there in 2012 that year, and we lost them to semi-final, and that was an issue for us, was that the ball movement into the full forward line. I think it certainly has changed. I think teams have got fitter forwards, like your typical corner forwards, as fit as your, you know, your wing forward these days. Like, they have to be in order to create space and create some movement in the forward line. So I think it's one of those things that, you know, with the game progressing, the high performance is improving, sports science, everything's improving. So the athletes are getting better and bigger and stronger. So it's one of those things that, you know, the game has to open up because of the fitness levels at this point. So, I've enjoyed kind of trying to find my way in that kind of space. But it seems to be going okay so far. I suppose it's the real test is in the heat of battle in championship, and we'll see how that goes then.
Yeah, and I suppose the biggest culture shock for you would be attacking full back lines.
Yeah, that's a bit of a struggle, all right, I'll be honest. Outside the 45 is a bit unknown territory there. But look, it's great to see. It's great for the game. I think, you know, with a full back there going up to get a score, ends up, you know, up in the other in their forward line, it's great to see. Not so great if you're on the receiving end and the full back takes off. No. But I kind of really enjoy it. I think that the best teams relish that sort of, you know, intensity. You know, the best forward lines relish the getting a turnover or hunting the, you know, them on the attack. And I think that's what we're trying to do there, is just relish that side of things. And hopefully, you know, it does translate into games at the important stage of the journey.
Yeah, well, tire him out so he doesn't have the energy to run up maybe or something like that. But like, are you almost learning the game all over again?
Yeah, there's certainly an element to that. Look, I suppose, like, as I said, I can't speak highly enough of the group of lads that are there at the moment. Every one of them that's been there has, you know, pulled me aside. Look, you have to be open to feedback as well. And I found when I came in, like, I was kind of trying to ask guys, you know, am I doing the right thing? Do I need to be, you know, in a certain position at a certain time? And the lads have been great. Like, I've played with a lot of lads that are still there, like Mark Collins, and like I've played with Mark since I was very young, and he's been outstanding for me. Brian Hurling, these lads that I've played with before, look, they've, it's not just the case of Ronan being patient. It's the case of kind of the group kind of knowing the position I'm in and being patient with kind of my development as well. And they've been outstanding in terms of helping me through that side of things as well. So credit to them. Look, I'm learning a lot more from them, I suppose, than what they would be learning from me. So it's just getting as much out of myself as I can off the back of that.
Yeah, exactly. Kamir, how would you look back at your AFL career? Like, I didn't realise it until I was reading about it, how you were, like, how affected you were by injury. I knew you had made it and you'd gotten onto the team early, and then you kind of went away. And I don't know at home here, were your injuries as publicised, you know, are publicised as bad as they were?
Yeah, look, I did run into a bit of misfortune right from the injury side of things. Eight operations in my 4 years on a list, and look, if you're trying to balance that, it's always going to be tough. But I think the key there, like, it would look like there's actually there, who's had, you know, he's been so consistent with injuries and stuff. Yeah. You know, he hasn't got any injuries. He's been on the ground every week, and you know, that's the real key to being successful, I think, from an Irish point of view, actually from all players' point of view when you're playing AFL, is just that consistency of performance. And being out in the track training, and that's proven that. And look, I suppose when I look back at my own career, I suppose, like, I had a lot of regrets too, in terms of how I managed it. And yeah, so look, and I had a couple of injuries. I'm not going to beat around the bush that held me back. But at the same time, I had opportunities that I probably didn't take as well. I suppose we had three coaches in the space of 4 years as well, which is unheard of for an AFL team. There was a lot of change going on. There was a change in culture nearly every year. The most previous manager I had, Brendan Bolton, like, we didn't exactly have the greatest relationship either. You know, so it was just a series of a few different events. I look back and say, look, it was an amazing experience in terms of the career itself. Look, it was a disappointment from what I wanted to achieve. But look, it was, as I said, it was a massive experience from a personal point of view, which has kind of, I suppose, added to my own character from that sense. And I'm really happy. I have no regrets of the decision I made. Maybe a few regrets on the performance side of things.
Right. So, like, I mean, just to give people an idea of, you know, the injuries that you had. So, like, I mean, you played 14 games VFL in your first year, and then you played your first AFL game. Was it at the end of that season as well? You were over at the end of 13, and then in 14 you made the breakthrough. Then in 15 you started getting a pain in your pubic bone. You ended up having to get both hips, surgery done in both hips. Then you came back in 2016 and you got a stress fracture in your foot. And then you had to go back in for more surgery on one of your hips, and that kept you out of 2016. You came back and you did your knee, you did your lateral ligament, and you ruptured your hamstring tendon off the bone.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yep. Like, I mean, Christ, I'd be gone home long ago if I was you, Kieran. Like, I mean, And then
you've your homework done there, yeah.
And then, like, I mean, you come back in 2017. And it was like something like, you were saying it was eight operations over four years.
Yeah. It was, look, 2017 was probably my best year. That was my last year. And I had an injury, uninterrupted pre-season in terms of injury, and got a good run and ended up playing a couple of games towards the back end of the year. But my body was in a great position at the end of 2017. And look, I wanted to continue playing at kind of a high level there as well. And I played, look, a semi-pro level over as well for that 2 years that I was working with the AFL Players Association.
All right.
So, look, I kept the body in kind of in good shape, you know, when it came to that. And I always kind of thought that, you know, if there was a sniff of a chance of playing with Cork again, that, you know, I'd have to keep myself in some bit of shape. So that was kind of a part of it as well. But look, as you said there, there is a list of injuries there, but you grow as a person off the back of, you know, injuries. And yeah, I went through, you know, some dark times. You know, everyone knows the drill there when you're injured, like being in a rehab room on your own, you know, wondering, you know, what am I doing here? But I suppose the biggest thing that I kind of look back on, and the advice I give, is just always ask yourself the question, why, you know, why am I here? Why am I doing it? And look, I always had the answer that kind of drove me, and that's what kept me going, really, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, there can't really be regrets, because it's your body kind of letting you down. But like, I had injuries throughout my career at the worst times, missing big games, and I always think back, geez, if I hadn't got them, you know. And I Zach is a great example, because I look at Zach going, geez, you don't know how lucky, he doesn't know how lucky he is, never being injured. He's just like, he's a bit of a freak athletically. But like, the thing that I see here, you had 2 years where you didn't have injuries, and you made the senior team in both years. Do you know what I mean? So like, there must be a bit of frustration there. Like, you were able to get on that team. It's just your body didn't give you the chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, you know yourself, like, it is very frustrating. I, like, you know, standard set for myself, you know, you go over there with the idea that you make it as a pro and long-term. Look, the average career is 6 years. I'm 2 years short of that. So look, it is a ruthless industry, and the game itself is very, very physical. I haven't seen any game like it. Even like, you know, you're covering 14-15K in a game, and you're doing that week in, week out for 22 weeks. And that's on top of the impact, and, you know, you're off the ball wrestling. You know, there's so much to the game that's different from the Gaelic football side of things. You know, there is transferable skills.
Sorry, Kieran. Were your injuries, like the knee injury and things like that, as a result of the physicality of it, or was it just the wear and tear of, you know, the grueling nature of it?
Yeah. I think that the hip injuries themselves and the foot injury, that was more load management. I was just increased load in terms of what I had been doing back here, and it was just the running, the running increased no end, and the body just broke down. When it came to the knee and the hamstring injury, that was kind of a freak accident. Going back to the flight of the ball and someone coming from behind didn't see him and got a knee into the side of the leg and thought it was a dead leg and got a scan the next morning just as a precaution, and the hamstring was off the bone. So it was one of those kind of freak incidents. But in terms of the physicality side of things, it was nothing to do with that. It was more just the load increase, that kind of my body broke down. And this is my point around, you know, guys going out at an older age, and they seem to be, the Australian Cup seems to be doing that more now. It would be a bit of a worry from my end, in terms of how your body's developing. Like your main developmental stage would be, you know, between 18 and 20. And I think that's a crucial time that guys need to go out to for their bodies to develop and adapt to, you know, how the game's played, how the physicality of it, the running capacity, all that sort of stuff. You know, between that age of 18 and 20, you know, that's where you get your most benefit from. Now, I'm not saying if you do grow a bit older, you know, that things won't work out for you. But what I'm saying is I think you have a better chance of really making it and pushing on between the age of 18 and 20. Mm-hmm. Look, and that's just from experience, my own experience, I suppose. And I don't know if Tommy Walsh feels the same about it, but he went out a little later. And so, look, I suppose anyone can say that, you know, you could go out at 24, 25 and make it too. It's just off the back of what I've experienced and what I've seen. I think the prime age there is between 18 and 20.
Well, that's it. We were talking about that on the show with Cathal McShane. He's 24, and I was thinking by the time he does his 2 years kind of rookie, learns the game properly, then maybe he's 26. He might only have 4 years ever playing. That's if everything goes perfectly according to plan, which very rarely do.
Yeah.
He's obviously decided not to go out. Probably the right decision in your experience then.
Look, I suppose it's very hard for me to think if someone wanted to go for it, it's very, like, you have to focus on the individual, what are the individual circumstances, what are their goals, what do they want to do, what do they want to achieve. So it'd be kind of wrong for me to kind of say if you should or shouldn't have went. But what I can say is I think that, you know, if you are going out a little bit later, maybe the odds are a little less against you. And that's kind of what, that would be my view on it anyway.
Yeah, okay, come here, I'm not going to keep you much longer. You have Down next. There are obviously some lovely memories for you. It's in Division 3, which is a funny one for you to play Down, after 2010. It's now in Division 3. There's no doubt you just have to get out of Division 3, and that's it. I'm sure Down are thinking the same thing, especially with this Tier 2 after coming in.
Yeah, I think it's a big focus for us. We knew it, I think, from the start. You know, it was it's something that we kind of, it's a place we don't want to be, let's be honest. I don't think it's a place that anyone wants to be, and we're working hard, we're taking every game as it comes. Every opposition is the same for us. We've got a set structure and plan in place. It takes a bit of time to develop, but that's only natural. We've got a lot of younger guys on the squad as well. Absolutely, look, we're going out to win every game. Our goal for now is to get out of Division 3. But that means, you know, scaling it back and taking every game as it comes. But it's exciting to match up against Down again. I think obviously we played them in the league the year after as well, the National League up there in Newry, and we came away with a win, and that was a great battle as well. So traditionally, I suppose any experience I've had of Down, no, we beat them in under 21 All Ireland final as well. So we've had, you know, some good battles with them. I'm really looking forward to it. Going out to Park Street now that the pitch is in great condition at the moment, and hopefully people come and have a look and see the exciting talent, I suppose, that's coming through in Cork football.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, well, best of luck with it, Ciarán, and best of luck for the year. It's good to have you back. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks very much, Colin. I appreciate it. Thanks a million.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D were at home by where Bernard, I thought they were in the bill. Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest. And there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, so predictions, and I'm going to make no apologies for saying that we're concentrating on Division 1 games this week because they are the most interesting. There's no doubt about that. We have Dublin, Monaghan, we've Donegal, Galway, we've Tyrone, Kerry. They're the three big games of the weekend. You could argue Armagh, Kildare is a very big game in Division 2 with a lot of pressure on it, and Cork versus Down in Division 3 as well, which is a lot of pressure on that and probably a top of the table clash. I want to start off with Monaghan, lads, against Dublin, because we speak about Dublin all the time. But Monaghan are very interesting, and I didn't really realise that Monaghan were very interesting until I started doing a little bit of research into them and looking through their team, and I couldn't believe it. So, like, I mean, their team against the last day against Tyrone, they had Kieran Duffy, Conor Boyle and Ryan Wiley in the full back line. Like, I mean, Conor Boyle and Kieran Duffy, Kieran Duffy's played as a third midfielder, Conor Boyle has played as a half back. Look at this half-back line. Carl O'Connell, Desi Ward, Michael Bannigan. Desi Ward is a wing forward. Michael Bannigan plays in a full forward line for DCU, if I'm not mistaken, Ger. He's played corner forward, he's played centre forward, and we know how Carl O'Connell's like. So immediately that's jumping out at me going, holy shit, what a half-back line. Now I'm getting excited about Monaghan, right? So then you have Darren Hughes and Niall Kearns, who are in midfield, and they sit. We know Darren Hughes is... does that a lot, kind of plays the Colm Kavanagh role and drops back. Kearns is doing that as well, allowing these three attacking players to attack from the half-back line. Half-forward line then, you have Ryan McInnesby, who does a all-over-the-field job. Dermot Malone, the other wing, who does an all-over-the-field job. Conor McCarthy then, Jack McCarron, Kieran Hughes, Conor McManus, all stay up front. What a lovely attacking Banty. What about that? Like, I mean, we know Banty... isn't I thought Monaghan were going stale under Malachy O'Rourke and did a terrible year last year, and they needed this fresh input, and that's definitely a new way of looking at it. And here's a stat from Cathal O'Kane from the Irish News: different scores, Division 1 teams, and different scores throughout their teams after the first two games. Monaghan have 13 different scores, Kerry have 12, Galway have 12, Donegal have 11, Dublin have 10, Tyrone have 10, Mayo 9, Meath 7. Monaghan 13 different scorers. They're attacking from all over the field. They're using their midfielders to drop back, Ger, instead of maybe a half back. They're picking practically three forwards in the half back line. This is bringing the game on to a new level altogether. Maybe not. I'm exaggerating it a little bit, but picking three, arguably three forwards in your half back line.
It's obviously Banty was there before, and there's a couple of guys that are probably still part of the squad, and I think it's important to bring a freshness to the setup. I think Malik O'Rourke, fully agree with you, he stayed a year too long, and it is hard to motivate fellas. I think, did he do six years, seven maybe in the end?
Yeah, one or two.
So, you know, there's only so much you can get across the fellas. Guys will become tired despite their what do you call it, their personal motivation. You just get tired listening to the same fella. So yeah. Banty's obviously coming in, he's giving the lads something new to work on, which will kind of whet the appetite and give them something to focus on. It's still very, very early days in the league. Guys are still kind of getting back to fitness or whatever, trying to figure things out, so it's hard to buy into some of the results sometimes. But
yeah, but it's definitely a departure. If he's leaving the four forwards up, which is Jack McCarron, Kieran Hughes, Conor McManus and Conor McCarthy.
Kieran Hughes goes out to... he got a red the other day, did he?
He got a red, yeah. But he's... I think a couple of lads got black cards, so he ended up going back out around the midfield and stuff like that to cover. But if you've got those four forwards staying up, they don't want to track, they don't want to go back, and they can get marks. You know, they have different... Jack McCarron... Now, Jack McCarron... in big games, I'm not sure if he shows up enough for me, but Conor McManus, we know, does. Kieran Hughes is a complete handful, and Conor McCarthy, being left as a forward without defensive duties, we know he has a wand of a left foot, as you know well.
Yeah, so with Conor in UCD for probably 5 years, and he's with the IT then doing his Masters this year. So I think Conor, I would say, he didn't discuss this with me, but knowing him and watching him play for Monaghan and UCD, I think his confidence was probably knocked a bit the last couple of seasons, because he was being taken off far more frequently than some of the other lads. Now, Jack McCarron has some great league campaigns, and I would agree, went missing in some of the bigger games in Championship. And the way Malik O'Rourke, for me, was setting up the forward line, it was Kieran McManus.
Plus one.
I was either McCarron or McCarthy, and McCarron was just ahead. But I think with McCarthy being given game time now, I hope he gets a good few games.
Where's his best position? He's played 11 there, but
11 for me is his best position because he is an excellent distributor of the ball, and he's also well able to kick scores outside the left, inside the left. So if the pass is on, he'll give it. He has good vision, but he's also well able to take his own score as well.
Yeah. Now they hammered Tyrone, and like they went to Salt Hill. And we're only pipped by Galway, who went down to Tralee and were very unlucky not to beat Kerry. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So like, this has been a very good start, and I think we all predicted Monaghan to go down. I'm changing that prediction.
I'm sticking Mayo into that.
I think I had Mayo to win the league final again.
You didn't? Oh, Jesus.
Hold on, we'll see how things go now this again.
I've changed my mind because looking through that team, there's a huge freshness to that now, and the age profile isn't that old. Do you know? And like, I mean, it's just. They seem like they're a very offensive looking team now.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about the age.
Colin Walsh isn't even mentioned in there.
It's a good point about the age profile because I think the inclination, certainly for me last year, was because the way the season went last year, as Gerard said, Malik O'Rourke stayed on a season too long. But because when you had the likes of Desi Moan and Vidi Corey stepping aside as well, there was a feeling there that like this is the natural end of this great Monaghan team for maybe the last 5 or 6 years. But when you look through that, then the age profile is actually, as you said, quite good. And when you mentioned the spread of scorers there as well, just Jack McCarron got a free, Conor McManus, who apparently, like I only saw the highlights and just read a match report, wasn't that much of a feature, which is very strange when you consider how integral Conor McManus has been to Monaghan over the years.
Yeah. And Kieran, he's also 34, so.
McManus is just so accurate, exactly, he's been playing for as long.
But that's it. But like the spread of scorers coming from elsewhere in the team and not being so reliant on McManus and kind of the lads around him, and especially when you're putting the likes of Michael Bannigan back in the half back line, it's a completely different. It's going to be a completely different Monaghan team, I think, to what we've been used to kind of seeing over the last few years.
Apparently, they kicked the ball a lot against Galway because it was that type of game. Against Tyrone, they couldn't do that because Colm Kavanagh was dropping back, so they ran it a little bit more. So there's that little bit of flexibility with their game plan as well, which every team should have, a running game and a kicking game. It makes no sense. I keep saying on the show, what kind of sense does it make to have only one way of playing? How easy is that to defend against when you can mix things up? That's when you can really hurt teams.
Listen to Banty talking after the game. He said he's very pleased with the performance because they were trying a couple of different tactical and structural things playing against the Tyrone defence, and he's very happy with those how those things worked out. So.
Yeah.
So he's obviously trying to get guys to be able to evolve and think on their feet. The long ball's on, give it if it's not. Let's use your smarts.
Am I right in saying as well that Monaghan got Peter Donnelly in as an S&C coach?
I think he did,
They have him in there, which is probably a big coup.
Which is a big coup. And one thing Banty will have is that old school, get feckin' stuck into them. Yeah, and Monaghan have that naturally anyways. They have that, you kind of know the level of aggression and intensity you're going to get from them. They don't usually drop off, that kind of thing. It was Kieran Duffy was nominated for an All-Star. He got something like 3 or 4 goals in a season. He's cornerback. Conor Boyle has scored 2 points in the first 2 games. It was him, remember, we were saying he just ran completely up the field unmarked against Galway. Yeah. And he got another one against Tyrone. Carol O'Connell got a point. Desi Ward got a point. Michael Bannigan, I didn't know much about him, but he's an out and out forward playing wing back. Absolutely very excited about Monaghan, I have to say. Desi Moan had a quote. I was pulling this up on Twitter yesterday because he said, you know, they've done well against Dublin in the league, but like, I mean, that's not going to tell them too much. He said, I always thought that Monaghan had the players and the matchups for this Dublin team for the last couple of years. That's why I would have liked if we got through that 2018 All-Ireland semi-final. You know, the one they lost to Tyrone and then played. Like, they lost the 2017 quarter-final to Dublin, 119-12 points. It was a bloodbath. Now, they came through the qualifiers that year, I think, but at the same time
they're better in the league that year, I think.
In the last four twice. Meetings in the league, Monaghan have won 2 and the other 2 have been like a point or something, you know. Yeah. But like, Monaghan playing Dublin in the league is like an All-Ireland final to Monaghan, and it's another league game to Dublin.
It was the first game of the season last year.
It was, with the mark up there.
One of them was in Croke Park when Dublin had already qualified for the league final.
That was another one. That was the other one, exactly. So I don't know, like, I mean, it's very obvious, Ger, that they're using that as confidence. I have no problem with that. This is Dublin in the league. Let's try and beat them. And you wouldn't even say that... You would know that Dublin might not be at the pitch you're at, but still, you've beaten them. Desi Moan has himself convinced that he would love to get them in an All-Ireland final based off league games, not even based off the championship hammering they took. Do you know what I mean? But it's easy to convince players, I suppose. That's sports psychology, right?
Yeah, Desi's probably been a bit speculative. If Monaghan were to go out this season and try to do the same thing again, they'll end up with the same result. They'll get through a lot of games, but they lose against the better teams. And again, that's what happened with Mally Quirk last year. But what Banty's trying to introduce, and again, the fact that they played one way against Galway, and obviously Galway being more offensive, there was going to be a couple of holes in their own defence if they were turned over. So Monaghan tried to kick it in, and the last day against Tyrone, who were generally more defensive, they were happy to be patient in their build up and be smart in possession. But Dublin. I can only see Dublin winning. I know I'm not jumping onto the predictions yet, but it's hard based on how Dublin have gotten on the last two games. It's hard to see them lose against Monaghan, but at the same time, Monaghan, that fast running game, guys exploding from the half back line, cornerbacks,
they can hurt Dublin with that team.
Exactly. And the hard ground in Croke Park then as well. Again, Croke Park is the same surface all year round. So
yeah, no, exactly. I'd agree with that. Dublin for me, but Monaghan can definitely hurt them. This will be a very exciting game. Would you agree in a word, Conor? We move on.
Dublin.
Donegal, Galway, lads. We know that I have a thing about Galway. Their team announced already. And Sean Mulkerran, their full back, who actually is from the Aran Islands, lads, which is incredible. And he's in NUIG, so during the year that's fine. During the summer he goes back to the Aran Islands, to back home for the summer, like all students kind of do when he works there. And he has to commute for training, and the commute involves a ferry and an overnight stay in Galway and coming back on the ferry the next morning. It's incredible stuff, isn't it?
That's commitment.
Yeah, so I was trying to find out what the story is. Sean Mulkerran, we all know Sean Andy O'Callaghan was the big centre-back or full-back for Galway under Kevin Walsh. And my information is that Pádraic Joyce doesn't fancy Sean Andy. And I can see why. Like, Sean Andy is like probably a bit of a crowd favourite in that he's a big burly fella. He loves to go on kind of trips up the field and you could find him anywhere, but he's not a good man marker, and his football brain I think he's all physique and all inspiration, whereas what his football brain position wise or marking wise he might be suspect. Apparently Joyce isn't being picked. Declan Kyne's gone off the panel. And he was a regular in the full back line. Joyce doesn't fancy him either. And I was asking about Owen Cairns as well, the cornerback, and I'm not really too sure about him or where he is. But he has Sean Kelly and Johnny Heaney, the two cornerbacks. This is a departure. Like, Sean Kelly, he was wearing number 10, but he's been playing kind of wing back, but he's not a cornerback. So it just goes to show where Galway's heads are at, especially potentially playing Donegal, who will be dropped. Against Meath, Donegal dropped an awful lot of players back into the midfield area. They pressed up in the kick out, then dropped back. And Mulkerran was talking about Joyce's philosophy, and he says his philosophy is simple, really. You get the ball and you move forward. He always says the ball is the fastest thing that will travel on the pitch, so that's what we're trying to implement. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. All makes perfect sense to me. Move the ball fast to beat the retreating players. You know, that's fine. But I suppose against a team like Donegal, Ger, you know, unless they can get the ball down there and be very aggressive, which they are, they will be finding a sweeper and make it more difficult for themselves.
And they'll be finding two and even three sweepers. And what Donegal did against Meath, and seeing the highlights and listening to the review on Monday with Colin Kelly and Cullen, they're so good at just sprinting back if they're not getting the kick out. And it's just the way they set up, and they like to break from the half-back line. And Donegal are going to do the same thing again. It'd be a big challenge to the Galway players and the Pádraic Joyce. What's he going to do this week tactically? Is he going to get them to be more patient? Obviously play the offensive play if it's on, but if it's not on, you can't be running down blind alleys. And what Donegal are great at doing is sucking you into that little middle part channel of the field, and then four or five big Donegal men will just turn you over and off they go. So it'll be a challenge to the Galway players, and I think it's up in Letterkenny as well. I know the three pitches there, they used to bring us up to Ballyshannon, which anybody familiar with the Dublin leagues, St Jude's pitch and Tyman North and the St Anne's and Bourne and Breed, like had a hill and boat house, so you're playing the hill boat house. Ballyshannon used to be like that. But, I think it still is.
Yeah, usually,
so it'd be tough up there up in Letterkenny.
Yeah,
then,
usually it's Ballybuffet, you know.
Such a good record in Ballybuffet. Letterkenny, I don't think they've lost a league game there in like 10 years or something like that.
I tell you, they're playing the percentages. I know they probably talk about, well, we want to move such a big county, we'd move around with three county grounds. We have three county grounds. But Donegal would be thinking there, Galway, they like to play some nice football based on what we've seen so far. So let's bring them miles away onto a lesser pitch than Ballybuffet. It's definitely the better of the three fields. But
it'd be a good trek from Galway to Letterkenny as well. Yeah, probably three and a half, 4 hours, I'd say, too. So just to add to it. But
it wouldn't be that much.
Well, you know the West. I'm not going to pull you up in the West. We were talking about this on Monday. Galway can't fall into the same trap as Meath and go short with their kickouts and allow Donegal head back. So what's the point of that? They ruined their wind advantage by not getting it down the field. If Donegal are pressed up, Galway go long from all their kickouts. Galway can then use their kick passing game and move that ball in fast before Donegal can get set up correctly. And I think that's where Donegal can really hurt, or Galway can really hurt Donegal. I'm interested to see this from a tactical point of view, to see, you know, if I start seeing the Galway goalkeeper kicking it out short and then Galway trying to play a kicking game when Donegal are back, I'd be like, Jesus, this makes no sense. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if they go along with all their kickouts and avoid the Donegal press and then play their nice football, I'd be like, that's smart.
If you were to substitute Galway into Park Tolleson last weekend for that first half where Meade, I can't think of the corner forward, he kicked a lovely point, first ball in, off his right, he just got a ball in, he turned, he
kicked over
the Meade corner forward. The first point, the last day.
Killian O'Sullivan.
Not Killian O'Sullivan, another fair haired fella.
Thomas O'Reilly.
I think the possession that Meade had in the first 20 odd minutes for with the wind and Park Tolleson, a Galway team based on how they're playing will have far more scores on the board.
You'd imagine that.
Which would draw Donegal out. Whereas because Meade hadn't got so many scores on the board, Donegal were comfortable in playing their system and trusting the system and knowing that we will create opportunities, which they obviously did.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, we'll get a prediction on this quickly. I'll go for a draw here. Two teams I like. Obviously Galway I love, but the home advantage is weighing up the draw there.
I'm going to go Galway just.
Galway just. Jared.
I'm going to go with a draw.
Go with a draw as well. Okay, right. Tyrone and Kerry next, lads. And we're talking about all the goal chances that Kerry gave up. We know Cottle McShane is back in for Tyrone. He comes straight back into the team as far as I'm concerned. All is forgiven. He'll cause Kerry problems. Kerry the last day were missing Tadhg Morley, Thomas Sullivan and Peter Crowley, who's back as well. Peter Crowley could be that holding stopper centre half back. Seamus Minehan was talking, he was doing all the media yesterday because I think he was at that higher education launch, and he was talking about Peter Crowley potentially coming in and helping out the defence. I'm just wondering if, like, when Kerry picks such an offensive forward line, they're not going to get any help really defensively from their forward line, not too much. So where do they get the help from, Ger? Is it like a matter, like we said, about where are Kerry falling down defensively? Is it a matter of nobody's there to organise it? Nobody's organising it well? Nobody's telling one of the wing-backs, don't follow, hold back? You know, is this an organisational thing on the field?
There was one or two of the league games last year where Kerry tried to play somewhat defensive and it didn't really suit them. I think the first game down in the Fitzgerald Stadium.
Against Tyrone, yeah.
So they like to play football. They like to push on. You need, this is where a strong six for me would come into play, where you have a guy who's organising the troops, regardless of whether they're a corner forward or regardless of the number on their shirt. If Connor is being forward and he's tracked all the way back to the corner back position and our corner back has gone to the field, I'm going to say, Connor, hold the fort there. We need to keep one extra guy here in case we get turned over, and that you do have a defensive platform, so you're defending facing the play as opposed to defending, which Kerry have been doing a lot of the time, running towards your own goal, which is a dangerous position then to be in. So they have a lot of kind of man markers, the way Peter Keane seems to set them up.
Yeah, but they seem to be all given a job and they're all following their men.
That works to a point. Like, yeah, two or three fellas need man marking. You can give, for me, I wouldn't be given more than maybe three man marking roles.
Yeah.
And other than that, then I'll be getting fellas to hold the position within reason. You know?
You're right on that. And it, like, obviously Owen Merchant's goal in the All-Ireland final replay came from everybody being too worried about their own man. Because at what point do you say with Merchant, shit, I'm leaving my man and going? And they were getting good at that, because that's what Mayo are great at. They're great at sensing danger and saying, well, my man's not a problem here, I'm going to go help somebody else. Now, in their defence, if I'm watching that live, I think Moran just has him. He has him. Yeah. He has him. Then all of a sudden he doesn't have him. But, like, I mean, I suppose somebody needed to spot that danger and come across. Even if you have a man marking job, to come across and act like a sweeper in that position.
Had Owen Merchant ever scored a goal in championship football either?
See,
I don't think.
I would be less critical of that, because I didn't. Yeah. If you're watching that live, you don't shout goal and nearly until the goal's in the bloody net, don't you?
You let him have it, because you probably think he's going to give it off to somebody else. Yeah. But Tadhg Morty, they analysed it fairly forensically after as well. Tadhg Morty just left that split second. Owen Merchant is so fast. But Tadhg Morty did come across, but it was just too late. But that's, I'd let them off for that one. But there's a lot of incidents just like that. The two goals that Galway get two goals at the weekend, but they definitely had a number of goal chances where, similar to that, like, a man didn't abandon his own man until the last second, and by that stage it was too late. Shane Welsh goal, and Johnny Heaney scored, obviously, and then they had another. Shane Ryan made a save then in the
Olé missed
from Anton
Olé
as well. Yeah, and then going back,
Comer had two goal chances.
Damien Comer, Rory Dean against Cork, for Cork against Kerry, was a couple of years ago in the Munster final when Cork got two or three goals in the first few minutes as well. That was another example of, you know, Kerry, their defenders will just have to realise that sometimes you just have to accept a point. A point is just the safer option rather than let somebody go on goal. And there hasn't been enough, and I think that's because of the absence of a leader. There hasn't been enough of that from Kerry, that they're not saying, listen, we just have to forget about your own man. Forget if your man scores 3 points in the first half. If you prevented two goal chances because of that, well, then that's the best way to go about it.
Just to share on that, right? So, like, this is always the conundrum for fellas in the full back line. So you're, I know, as a forward, where goal scoring was never a forte of mine. So I'm running through, bearing down in goal, and there's a full back line all marking their men. So now, if they stand off me and just keep standing off me, they make my life very easy. If one of them steps up, not rushes out to me, I'll just throw it over his head. That makes my decision easier. But if one of them kind of rushes me and then kind of doubles back, you know, scares me into the pass, now I'm given a loopy one over his head. He could turn around potentially and surround the man that catches it. You know, like, in a way, Kerry, how do you learn that? Or, like, that's something you either have good defensive instincts or not, or is that coachable?
That's coachable.
It is.
And it's probably not being coached then, based on the evidence. And I think the fault is probably the wrong word, but the responsibility in that case. And actually, listen to, you referenced Kieran McGeaney in the last piece where obviously Leash bet him the weekend. But he took responsibility for whatever they did during the week and how he hadn't set up, it didn't work. But Peter Keane has to take responsibility that, in the same way, it doesn't matter who puts this ball over the bar. Once you win, the man in the best position gets the ball. It doesn't matter who's defending who. If your guy is stopped, you've got to cover the goal. Yeah. If your guy is going to get a point, you've got to cover the goal to stop a goal. And we concede one as opposed to conceding three. Owen Morton's goal was a case of the Dublin defence, Dublin forwards cleverly drew their men out, like Donegal did. So it was in the semi-final 2014.
But is that not a point where you go, he's moving out there, he's no danger, I'm not going to fall for that?
So,
do you know what I mean? Is that not a defender going, I know what he's doing here?
So what is influencing the defender to make that decision? What's expected and what has been communicated to the defender before the match is what is going to influence him. So if you're a man, you're doing a man marking job on Kieran Kilkenny, if he only gets one or two points, you've done a great job, don't be worrying about anyone else, and therefore your game sense is retracted, or it's just put in a box and you don't even think about it because you're just marking your own man, someone else's job. So I think when you coaches go out and give just a specific role without giving a fella an opportunity to use his game intelligence,
use his brain,
you're marking Woolley, don't let him get the ball as best you can. However, if Jerry goes on his arse, you've got to get back and cover him, because Jerry's man's going to get a goal. So That is coachable. And most instinctive defenders would have that ability, but it can be coached out as well. Oh, Morton's goal then, we would have worked in a couple of setups over the years, and Michael Savage with St Vincent as well. If, in that situation, if I was Tadhg Morley, I would be timing when to step up, but I'd be waiting for the call from behind me, and I'm going to force the ball carrier, if you're coming through on goal, I'm going to force you to give a kind of a lob pass as best as possible, not let you go past me, and Klucko's going to come out
and clear it out.
Exactly.
Right. So you walk through these scenarios, like the three in there and just someone bearing down on goals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other one coming in at the angle then, Klucks and Michael Savage were such great, still are great shot stoppers that regardless of who's taking the shot, as opposed to if I mark my man on the edge of the D and I go out to you and Connor pops the ball to the edge to my man and he palms it in, we took the percentage call where I'm actually going to stay my man, pretend to go, but I'm going to stay my man and force the ball carrier to shoot
from that angle.
From that angle,
yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. That's a very good call. Yeah. That's a good call. Have to say, we never did any walkthroughs like that in any with any of my managers with Leash, but it's all coachable then, isn't it? And I suppose they are the things, exact things. That, and that's probably why after the Ireland final it all came out that Cluxton was looking at a laptop for 3 hours in the training, because he had in his head seen a scenario like that and he didn't react to Spillane's goal like he thought he should have.
Now I different horse for courses, and Clucko and Johnny Cooper and few other lads, they were all over that video analysis stuff. Myself and a few other lads, I watch it once, watch it twice, happy enough. Move on, like, you know. Some fellas love it, but
torturing themselves. Right, listen boys, that's all we've time for. Like I said, the big one,
did we predict there that
What are we predicting here?
After all that, I still go Kerry.
You fancy Kerry.
But I think if you look at Meath's result against Donegal, the couple of points that Tyrone bet me by, but it was a 4 or 5 and nobody bet him. Maybe throwing Ireland where we think they are, but McShane coming in, if he does start, it'll make a difference. So we'll have to go with Kerry down there.
On Monday we'll definitely cover Tyrone, and because we haven't talked about them yet, and we'll see what they're shaping up as. Like I said, the big one in Division 2 is Kildare and Armagh, and to be honest, I was thinking the loser of that is under big pressure, and they are under pressure. But I think 5 wins will get you out of Division 2. I think 4 wins could do it. Yeah, they're all beating each other. Like 9 points could get you out of there. 4 wins and a draw and 2 losses. Do you know what I mean? It's such a dog-eat-dog one. So maybe there's not as much riding on that. Cork down, obviously, is that big one. You fancy Cork in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And in Division 4, Carlow are at home to Limerick. Carlow lose that, you'd imagine they're gone. The way Sligo are winning their games, Limerick would have been winning their games as well. So keep your eye out for those ones.
There's a big under 20 game, I think, in Wicklow against Dublin in Aucrem at 2 on Saturday.
Right, and that started actually.
And a lot of these Wicklow fellas bet Dublin in the minors a couple of years ago. Right, so that will be interesting.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So they did. They had a great minor team under Kevin O'Brien, didn't they? So
Mayo Galway on Saturday under 20 as well. So Mayo Galway. Big game, under 20 games. Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of completely flying under the radar, the under 20, isn't it?
A great idea to put it in the middle of Sigerson and National League, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Croke Park.
Ah, well, that was a bizarre decision. All right. Yeah. Exactly. Listen, if we start on that chair, we could be here for another hour. Right. Come here. We'll go and we'll talk to you on Monday in the review show. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.